Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Welcome to another episode of the DIGA podcast. Today I have with me Dr. Akil Abraham, who recently matched into dermatology. Dr. Abraham applied to anesthesiology and dermatology at the same time, so he dual applied, and he shares why he chose dermatology, but he also shares why he was interested in anesthesiology and how he was able to use that as a backup plan. So I found this very helpful and interesting, especially to those who are interested in both of those fields. So I hope you enjoy, and with that, we'll see you on the skin side.
All right, welcome to another episode of the DIGA podcast. Super excited for this episode. We've got a really unique and cool background here in Dr. Akil Abraham. So thank you, Akil, for being on with us. And would you mind introducing yourself for us?
Of course. I'm stoked to talk to everyone. I'm super happy to be here as well. My name is Akil. I'm from the DFW area originally. I went to school at Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine, and now I'm a TY resident at Baylor Fort Worth. And I matched dermatology at Health Partners Minneapolis for my advanced program. So I'll be going there after my TY year. So I'm super happy to be in the session. I listened to a lot to DIGA when I was applying. So I'm just trying to pay it forward. And yeah, I'm so super happy to talk to everyone and be here.
Yeah, no, appreciate you coming on. And we'll kind of get into the nitty gritty here in a minute, but tell us about dermatology, why you chose it, and what led you to this path.
Of course. I going into medical school, I don't think I really had any certain specialties in mind. Dermatology was always on, you know, in the periphery, and was always on my mind, but I didn't want to be set on one certain specialty. And a thing about me was I actually started med school fairly young as well. So I think I started med school when I was 20, so I didn't really have much healthcare background or experience. So yeah, I was just really open to a lot of fields, didn't know what certain fields entailed and what others did, but dermatology was something that always stuck out to me. Even, you know, in the preclinical curriculum, I loved learning about the skin, loved the interconnection with immunology, and I think that really stuck out. So I did a dermatology rotation here in Dallas that I set up through my school, and I just kind of like fell in love with the spectrum of things that dermatologists do. I think going into my dermatology rotation, I, you know, had a totally different perspective of what dermatology was than when I came out of it. So I think it was like an amazing experience. I worked with Dr. Abramovitz here in Dallas, and he was a great mentor, a great individual, and really opened my mind to the whole field. I think one thing that really struck out to me personally and why I chose dermatology is just how impactful it was on patients' lives, and how much of a impact the skin and just, you know, our appearance and our skin puts on, like how it affects our view of ourselves and how others may view it as well. So I saw just like huge interconnectedness with like how our social well-being and our psychological well-being with dermatology. And I think I saw that, you know, when we were putting patients on biologics, whether it was for psoriasis or eczema, and, you know, people who were, you know, didn't want to wear short sleeves or didn't want to show their skin out in public, and, you know, putting them on certain biologics and helping them, and, you know, having this like complete like transformation and how they view themselves and how they felt about them. I think our skin's like the first thing we showcase to others, like whether it be acquaintances or strangers. So I think having the ability to affect that like drastically improves someone's well-being. You know, like I've been in clinic where we help drop like a patient's blood pressure by 40 points, but, you know, and then I'll also like help clear up a rash. And I think that just has like a profound impact and like a way to, it was just a really interesting way to connect to patients. And I just loved both the surgical and the procedural aspects, as well as like the interconnectedness with the immunology. So I think all those things really came together well with dermatology.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I think, yeah, the immune system and the variety and, you know, just the impact of people. I mean, every time I have a skin thing come up, I'm like, oh, man, this is embarrassing. So, you know, exactly. I appreciate those thoughts. So and then I also think a big theme of this podcast, specifically this episode, will be just kind of like your experience, you know, as I understand, you dual applied to dermatology and anesthesia. You know, something that we can touch more on it throughout, but can you just kind of explain like how your interest in anesthesia developed as well, and like how you were able to factor that into your decision to dual apply?
Of course. So like I said, I didn't have much medical experience coming in. So I was really open to a lot of fields. I really try to keep my like mind open. I felt like when I was rotating, I really knew what I didn't want to do, but I didn't also like realize what I, you know, wanted to do or loved. I felt this love for dermatology, but through the process, I also had people tell me, you know, you should rotate through anesthesia. When I was on my surgery rotation, I really liked, you know, I saw what anesthesiologists did. I was kind of keen to it. I found an interest to it, just because I loved physiology and loved that aspect of medicine as well. And I think for anyone dual applying, like in general, I think a key thing, like one of my preceptors once said, is, you know, as doctors, we could probably do or like envision ourselves happy in, you know, more than one specialty. But finding which specialty is the best fit is what's hardest, right? So I think that really like kind of came into fruition at this point. When I was on anesthesia, I did that as a third year rotation. And I just found like an interest to, you know, physiology. I love the procedural aspects as well. And it was a really unique kind of field of medicine that I feel like other fields of medicine really, you know, are not used to. I love the adrenaline rush. I also had a lot of people tell me I definitely had a, you know, somewhat of an anesthesiologist personality because of, you know, how I may interact with others. So, you know, when which is, you know, kind of a funny thing, because I know we hear about like personalities a lot, but it does have some truth to it, right? So you know, I really vibed and really had great relationships with all the anesthesiologist preceptors I worked with. And yeah, I felt like I could see myself doing it as well. I think as third year med students and, you know, going into fourth year, like the biggest challenge is, you know, you're only exposed to certain specialties for, you know, sometimes like a month or a couple of weeks. And then in the beginning of fourth year, and even before that, you're expected to do audition rotations, you're expected to schedule those, you're expected to, you know, choose what you want to apply to, write a personal statement, and by September of your fourth year. So, you know, there's only really like a year of true clinical experience that a lot of medical students get. And a lot of those months are taken away by, you know, core rotations, whether you might be interested in them or not, right? So I feel like any specialty outside of those core rotations, you really have to like branch yourself and really expose yourself to it. And a lot of this has to do with, you know, being from a DO school as well. You know, a lot of specialties, people go into a lot of primary care specialties, but if you want to branch yourself out from that, you really have to do you know, a lot of like intrinsic intrinsic motivation, and there has to be a lot of like self-reflection on your part, right, to set these things up. So I think that's where really the like challenge between like which one I really wanted to do came about. So I guess in that process, I realized, okay, as a DO student, it is difficult to match into dermatology, whether as a DO or MD student, you know, you can have perfect stats and, you know, it's unfortunate, but there's only so many limited spots that we have, right? So you could have perfect stats, perfect CV, research, but you could still go unmatched. And that's, you know, one thing that comes with dermatology being such a uber competitive field, right? Like that's one of the downfalls of that. But I guess in order to provide me with some comfort and I think I realized what I had wanted. I think I had realized that if I did not match dermatology, I would be comfortable pursuing life as an anesthesiologist. So I think once I realized that, I had made this decision to dual apply. I loved both fields. I could see myself working in both fields. I think that's kind of like what I would tell like med students now. If you are interested in dermatology and say you're interested in another field, I wouldn't discourage someone from dual applying, right? Because I think at the end of the day, and if you do realize you don't want to do anything other than dermatology by rank list date, you can just submit your dermatology programs. So I don't feel there's like a real negative to it, other than, you know, there is a lot of energy devoted to it, like as in you have to write 2 personal statements, you do have to, you know, stratify your CV accordingly. But I think other than that, and you do have to go on almost double the interviews. So, but yeah, I think other than that, it provided me with a lot of comfort knowing that I'll go matched, you know, with the number of interviews I had in both fields. And I think it took like a huge burden off of me in that sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think we can all be happy in so many different fields of medicine. I think medicine is it's just, we're so blessed to be in this career, in this field, in general. And I think, I think a lot of people, I mean, in my experience working with different dermatology residents, like, I don't know if it was just the particular place I was at, but like almost all of them had dual applied, mostly to like internal medicine and dermatology, or family medicine. But, so I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think it's good to hear from like somebody who did it successfully, who like did have a good backup plan. And I'm sure there's somebody there out there listening that is interested in anesthesiology, as well as dermatology. So I think this is super helpful. Kind of transitioning, changing gears a little bit here. So in your kind of first 2 years of medical school, those preclinical years, what were some things that you did outside of the classroom to excel, or just, you know, maybe it was unrelated to dermatology? What were some things that you did to get involved?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I did during my preclinical years was still continuing the mentorship and leadership and like volunteer experiences I kind of was interested in during college and throughout high school. I kind of kept building upon those things. So personally, like I helped form an organization that helps mentor underserved youth in my community where I grew up. And we basically provide like tutoring services and things for kids who might want to, you know, take the SAT and ACT. Personally, growing up, I grew up in a place of, you know, a lot of kids don't pursue higher education and don't go on to college. So helping kids, you know, realize what college was and if it was the right path for them, and just providing mentorship, whether it was like in fields of medicine or, you know, something completely unrelated. I was really always interested in doing that. And I thought during med school, like the first couple of weeks, I was, you know, thinking to myself, I was like, oh, there's no way I can keep doing this. But I think as time progressed, I realized, you know, there's certain things that are meaningful to me. And it's easy to make time for things that are meaningful, you know, even when you have a busy schedule. So I think doing those things really set me apart those first couple of years. I had a lot of attendings and interviewers ask about those things. And I think they could tell that there was, you know, passion in my tone and passion in my voice. So I think that always struck out to them. And I was always, you know, applauded on those things. So I think just keeping things like that in mind is super, super important. I think throughout the interview process, you know, you do have people ask you about research, right? You do have people ask you about your scores and your merit. But I think the most number of questions I got, whether it was an anesthesia or dermatology, both interviews, I always had people ask me about community service, about leadership, about what was important to me as an individual. And I think, you know, keeping those things alive during my med school and being involved in leadership in even in my med school too, I held a couple of positions in things like SSP and things like underserved medicine. And I think there is this emphasis on helping the underserved in my application, or this like common theme that I was always passionate about and that others always notice as well. So I think that's what I had primarily done the first 2 years. We also got hit by COVID during my first 2 years, so it was pretty rough, you know, being virtual, but you know, doing things like, you know, studying for boards, all those things are super important as well. For our first 2 years, we had, you know, we had a scored step one, so there's this frenzy going on about, you know, studying for the initial set of boards that, you know, definitely comes with the first 2 years, that I would still encourage people, you know, whether it's just pass fail boards now too, I would still encourage people to study for step one and level one just as you would otherwise, because I think like that knowledge builds upon is built upon for things like doing well on level two and step two and even step three. I just finished my third set of boards right now, and I had things that I remembered from studying from step one on there. So I mean, it never goes away, you know, these things just build upon each other. So yeah, having a strong foundation in clinical and like preclinical sciences is super important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's it keeps you busy during years one and two, but it's cool that it's a common thing that I've seen lately is just like, and I love, and I think it's helpful for a lot of students, is that you can, you know, kind of just do things that you're interested in, right? You don't need to like make everything about dermatology. You know, you can just kind of continue with what you're passionate about, and you know, you can have other interests, which I think is a lot of people like to hear that. So, and I like to hear that. So, can you tell us a little bit about research? I know, like, especially as like DO students at times, like it can be a little bit more difficult when you're not attached to an academic center to get involved in research. So I think this would be helpful for particularly like DO students across the nation to hear how you were able to do that successfully.
Yeah. Personally, I feel like I definitely, there's a bit of luck involved to all this as well. I cold emailed a bunch of dermatologists in my area, and I cold emailed like a dermatopathologist and cold called them. And one of the dermatopathologists, Dr. Cockrell, who was previous president of the AAD and, you know, has his own derm path company now, invited me to come in, and I was able to, you know, see him read slides, and he gets slides from all over the country in the South. And I think just working with him gave me this, like, first of all, it exposed me to this field of dermatology I knew nothing about. You know, derm path is intimidating, to say the least, as you know, even as residents. So as a med student, yeah, it's definitely a field that, you know, I knew nothing about coming in, but I was definitely grateful to experience that. And by working with him, I was, you know, always showed an interest in writing, you know, whether it was case reports or whether it was being involved in certain systemic reviews or analyses. They always had something going on. So I think I got really plugged in. Also working with other residents and interacting with them, I had the ability to, you know, ask them what they have going on and be involved in research that way. So also I think, yeah, so just the networking component is definitely critical. I know that's like a huge part of dermatology already, but you know, it just goes to show that, you know, meeting the right people and that, you know, interacting with the right people like goes a long way. Cause I don't think I would have been, there's no way I would have been able to do this, you know, single-handedly by myself. Yeah. So I think I started my research during the summer of second year after boards. So I was actually kind of like later to the game than, you know, kids who are doing research the very first day. I was involved in research that wasn't dermatology during my preclinical years. And I think that's, you know, completely like, that's great too, you know, having those extra experiences, no matter what. That people will ask about them, people will be interested in them, and it's always a great thing to have on your CV, regardless of what field you end up applying to. I think, the derm-specific research for me really came in during my derm rotation of third year and during my summer of second year after boards. So I think it's just making time. You know, I would go to the path lab after, like, even after some of my ped clinics days to like go see if they had anything happening. And, you know, I'd like always email some of the other people at the Derm Path Lab to see if anything was cooking or, you know, if they had any conferences going in. I think getting a lot of like research initially as a med student is tough, right? Getting published in journals, it's a tough thing to do. So like my approach to research was honestly presenting more so at conferences, and you know, during COVID we had a lot more like virtual options and things of that nature. So
yeah,
I would try like submitting, I would try submitting abstracts to these conferences and you know, listing it as like an oral presentation or like a poster presentation, you know, if I got accepted, and doing research in that way. And I think to my surprise, like I never got any like negative thoughts about that, right? Because I still had like publications and everything, of course, but I think still doing poster presentations and things are, you know, an easier way than, you know, maybe getting published to show you're interested in a field, right?
Yeah, and I think that's great to hear, like, you know, because you hear different things, but it's good to hear that you can do, you know, more simple research. They're not expecting you to, you know, be publishing in Nature or in JAMA or so that's awesome.
Right. Right. It's hard to get accepted to like JAD and like these, you know, like PubMed index like articles, right? Like I would say, yeah, definitely try to. But you know, as a med student, if we were all expecting to get published, you know, that would be insane, right? Like we would have so many new like case reports and articles. But so I think another like a less labor intensive way is to go about doing conferences, and that's still, you know, still a great thing to put on your CV.
Yeah, totally agree. So kind of move into your rotation. So it sounds like you did an elective during your third year. Do you have one or two electives at RCOM?
So we had two electives, and then we had like IM selectives that we could choose. And then I think it's changed now, but then we had a bit more variety. So for my surgical selective is what I did my anesthesia rotation in, for example.
Okay.
And then I used one of my electives for dermatology.
Okay, cool. And then you said you had one other elective and you were able to like kind of get some variety. The reason I'm asking is I know a lot of students are like, should I use both of my electives or, you know, three of them or whatever you get all in dermatology? Or should I like, maybe I'm interested in another field and I want to try that out. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I would say, and this is might be a controversial opinion, but I would say if you see yourself going into other fields, I would say you always want to explore those fields, right? I would say whether that's doing a rotation in it or one thing that helped me, for example, like when I was on to even see if I was remotely interested in anesthesia is when I was on my surgery rotation, I asked my surgeon, I said, hey, can I go in a couple hours with the anesthesiologist, you know, after afterwards, and I talked to the anesthesiologist, and he was completely fine with me like shadowing him for a day or two. And I think I came on one of my off days over the weekend to come see what, you know, anesthesiology was about, because it's hard to see what an anesthesiologist does, you know, as a if you're not in the OR already, right? It's I feel like a lot of people, you know, we know what like pediatricians do, we know what family medicine does, but say you're interested in like pathology or like a field that, or radiology, for example, you really have to like go and see if you're interested in those fields. So even as a med student, I didn't know if I wanted to do radiology, for example. So I went in a day and talked to the radiologist at my hospital and said, hey, can I spend a couple hours with you and see what's happening? And he was okay with that. So I think doing that initially like helped me understand like, hey, I might want to do an actual rotation in anesthesia and see how it fits me. So it's a very non-traditional way of doing things, but like I think a lot of, you know, as attendings, most of the people in the hospital just want you to realize what you will be happy doing, right? I think any attending, any like any doctor in the hospital like will agree with that, because I always sensed that when I was talking to my attendings, they said, you know, definitely like go explore other fields, go see what you want to do. If you're pursuing their field, of course they'll be happy, but I think, you know, they have this understanding that, you know, not everyone's interested in certain things and certain things fit other people better. So so once I did that, I realized I wanted to do a rotation, and I pursued my rotation in anesthesia, and I had scheduled my rotation in dermatology initially already because I was already interested in it. So I would say instead of, you know, maybe stacking all three of your electives or all four or however many electives you may have in dermatology, if you are interested in another field, maybe it's to look into it. If you know you're going to do dermatology, of course, go ahead and do three electives in dermatology. But whether I wouldn't say to, even if you're doing that, I would say, you know, maybe get some variety, maybe do some peds derm, maybe go into Mohs, like maybe try to schedule a rotation in that, maybe try to get in some derm paths during your rotation. I would say to try to do more than just gender, maybe, if you're interested in it, because, you know, you never know what piques your interest.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And nobody's ever mentioned that to me doing, you know, maybe, you know, yeah, the derm path or Mohs, mixing it up even in that way. That's a cool idea. And then so your fourth year, the away rotations, I know these are like big time. It's really important, especially as a DO student. How many of those did you do, and how did you manage that with cost? And
yeah, so this is another reason I was happy I dual applied. So I personally didn't schedule that many away rotations, just because during my fourth year, I wanted to keep it open more. I've taken step two a bit later than I think I'd taken it, you know, towards maybe July or August or early August. So I wanted time to, you know, like time for applications and time to build my applications and do those things. So I had only scheduled four rotations in dermatology, which I know seems like, you know, you're like, oh, that's four dermatology rotations, but I think that's on the lower end for a lot of DO students, especially when some of those rotations, you know, I had a rotation, an audition that lasted like a week long. So for DO auditions, a lot of them are on the shorter end, you know, some may be 2 weeks, some are 1 week, some are 3 days, you know, so there's a lot of variety between how long auditions are. So I had scheduled three, I had done three and I mean four. So I did three in person, one virtual. And I think that's how many dermatology auditions I did. I only did one anesthesia audition, and that was at, you know, my program that was back home, like in so I have a lot of family in Houston, so I chose to do an away rotation there for anesthesia, just to, you know, because I would be at home, I'd be, you know, close to family, and I figured I wanted to get another month of anesthesia before deciding, you know, what I really wanted to do and what I really wanted to go into, right? So I think that experience was awesome. Like, I think it helped me realize, you know, it's a great field, but it showed me a lot of, you know, maybe things I wasn't exposed to like in the non-academic setting. Like academic anesthesia is very different than, you know, private practice anesthesia. And I think it really helped me realize how residency would be. And I think doing that audition helped me understand, you know, how a dermatology residency would differ from an anesthesia residency. And, you know, there's huge differences between the two, between like day-to-day life and everything like that. So I think doing those auditions were really helpful in that sense. So yeah, I did 4 total dermatology auditions and I did 1 anesthesia audition in my home state.
Super cool. And I'm sure that was really helpful to like see the difference in the work-life balance and help you make your rank list a little bit. And one quick question, drawing back on what you said, can you explain what a virtual rotation looks like? I've heard other people talk about this and I'm like, how does that happen? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. And this was in mind, this is like still when COVID is, you know, somewhat more of a thing than it is now. But yeah, it struck me as somewhat unique initially as well, but I think it was still an awesome way to, you know, get to know the program. So for our virtual rotation, for example, we would join didactics, you know, when they were doing it in the mornings, and we'd basically have sessions scheduled throughout the week of us meeting with attendings and us, you know, getting, you know, different lectures of different principles of dermatology. And they would even do like show us some like procedural aspects and of, you know, maybe cosmetic dermatology and maybe other aspects of dermatology that we might not, you know, be like aware of or exposed to. So I think that was really helpful. And it was awesome because I got to stay home, which, you know, I realized, you know, I didn't know what the, like, I guess the yield of this dermatology rotation, of this virtual rotation was, right? So I guess, like put bluntly, I guess when you expect to like rotate somewhere, you're obviously doing it for an interview, right? So initially I was like really scared. I was like, oh, is this like virtual rotation going to amount to anything? Is anything going to happen from this? But I guess because they had set everyone up virtually, you know, we were all on even like playing ground, and it still helped me understand the program so well, right? It helped me get familiar with the attendings, with the residents, with the culture. You still get all those things through a virtual audition, which I found helpful. And we had the opportunity at, on our last day to do a presentation over, you know, like a dermatological condition and do a quick presentation for the residents and the attendings. And I think that, you know, helped people set each other apart and really helped us like talk about ourselves a bit more. So yeah, I had only done 1 virtual audition. I know it's still somewhat of a thing. I think that program's still like doing a virtual audition this year as well. So it's, you know, I don't know whether it's here to stay or here to go, but like I thought it was unique. And I think it really honestly like mirrored kind of what you get in like a virtual interview as well. I think it kind of helped me like prepare for those things, because, you know, my first virtual interview, I was really like, oh, this is how things are going to run. You have no I guess like preconception, or you have no idea of what's going to happen during your first interview, right? But then you slowly realize that every interview is like set up the same way, and every residency interview is, whether it's anesthesia or dermatology, all of them have this similar structure. And I think like doing that thing and like being on a virtual audition, like being comfortable, like looking at a camera and talking, being comfortable with like, you know, sharing your personality, even if it's through a computer, I think those things are really important to do.
Totally. I love that. It's like almost like an extended interview. And it's nice that you can save the cost. That's kind of why I was curious about it. And then when you traveled for your other aways, were you just staying in Airbnbs, or like, did you have family? I think the reason I'm asking is people are always worried about the cost, right?
Yeah, the cost is definitely like such an important factor. You know, if it wasn't for the cost, I think I would have done, you know, a handful more auditions, you know, because, you know, you always want to do things to increase your chances. But for me, I think I realized that I wanted to rotate at places that I had family close by. So I rotated a lot at the, like, for example, in the East Coast programs in New York and Jersey. I had a lot of family there, so I stayed with them. I borrowed their cars. And, I got really lucky with doing that. So I was only paying, for the flight and, for normal expenses. So I didn't really have any extra costs like associated with that. When I did rotate elsewhere, I would stay at Airbnbs, and I try to stay with friends that I knew, or I try to like talk to residents who are in the program and ask, maybe for advice on if they had any. Sometimes there's residents like who are renting out their room, on Airbnb for like the med school auditioners. I saw that on one of my programs, so. I think just, being asking whether it's other people who had rotated there before and what they did. I think that was always another thing. I always asked people who had rotated at the program previously, what their approach was, where they stayed, and all those things. I think that's like one of the really tough parts of doing of doing auditions is definitely the cost associated with it. It's, a tremendous cost. It really is. But I think really understanding where you want to see yourself and like which programs you're really interested in and doing a ways there is so important. Rather than just, doing a ways to like get a load of interviews, right? Because it'll help you increase your chances, but at the end of the day, when you're ranking, you're probably going to put those other programs above anyways. So yeah, I would always encourage people to, be try to be financially conscious during this whole process, because even applying itself is, a tremendous amount. I personally matched at a program I didn't do an away at. So I think I realized that, instead of spending money on, doing an away, I'd rather spend my money applying. Or like having a like casting a wider net and applying to more programs. And it worked out for me. I think I got so I had only done three or four auditions, but I think I had got, a handful of other interviews. So I doubled the interviews and I had auditions like at the end of the day, right? So I think that came from casting a wider net. And also through like talking to some of those residents at that program. But for example, I didn't have a connection with anyone at the program I matched at. I hadn't known any resident. I didn't know it, of the attendings. I kind of just applied because I was interested in them, and I was trying to cast a wider net, and it worked out. Like I really loved the program when I interviewed, and yeah, it was awesome that it worked out in that sense.
That is awesome. And can you kind of work us through? So you applied to how many programs for dermatology and anesthesia? Like what was your strategy there?
Whichever field I obviously was more interested in dermatology, so I applied to more dermatology programs. I think it really depends on what you are dual applying with or what else you are interested in with as well. So I would say honestly, for me, I had applied to about 70 or 80 dermatology programs. I know there's about like 130 or 140. You could go crazy and apply to all of them, but I think I realized where I was interested in and what was like realistic for me. So I'd try to like for as a DO applicant, I'd look at where people had previously matched at, like even if there was like a 2%, like a DO presence in the program, I'd apply there because that means they had previously taken DOs, right? So I think that was really important. So like doing some like research about that was really important. But I think at the end of the day, I had applied to around like 70 or 80 dermatology programs. I think I had applied to about 50 or 60 anesthesia programs. And that's also partly because anesthesias become very competitive as well. So say I would say, for example, if I was dual applying with medicine or family or like a less competitive field, I would have probably only applied to 20 or 30 for that, like if I was doing that. Because those a lot of the times, and I think you'll realize this is When you're applying to things like internal medicine or family medicine, or, you know, some of those other fields that have, you know, 20 positions or these like huge classes, you know, you're the interview to you're basically like application to interview ratio is a lot higher because they have such a they have such huge programs that, you know, that you could easily get interviews at, compared to like dermatology when there's two or three spots. And I guess as a general rule, most programs like interview 10x the amount of positions that they have. So if they have 2 to 3 spots, they'll usually interview 20 to 30 spots, 20 to 30 applicants. You know, that's not much, right? So yeah. I think applying to multiple programs like that, you know, there are larger programs. There's derm programs that are 5 or 6, but even then that's only 60, you know, that's 60 interviews for, you know, a program that probably received 600 or 700 applications, right? So totally. it's always it's totally mindful to do that. And I had realized like anesthesia was getting more competitive. So in hindsight, I think I would have still sticked at the number I was of programs I applied at, because I think I realized anesthesia was also getting somewhat more competitive, and I know it's getting more competitive by the year, similar to a lot of other fields. So I was happy that I had applied to that many, because anesthesia has this huge regional preference. So most of the places I applied to, you know, were in the South and were in Texas. And I think doing so like really helped me, you know, those were the places I was interested in at the end of the day. So anywhere I could see myself going, I applied to those programs. And yeah, I was really happy with the amount of interviews I got.
That's so awesome. Right. Yeah, I mean, congratulations. It's so big. And along that same vein, do you have any advice for people with interviews in general?
Yeah, I think my biggest interview advice is, first of all, of course, be yourself. Be comfortable talking and like demonstrating your personality through the camera. I think a big thing that a lot of people are unaware of when they talk through interviewers is to show confidence, but to also show a level of humility. I think as med students, it's easy to forget that at times. So I think being confident, but being humble at the same time. I know it's easy to rant about your accomplishments, but I think having this level of humility and humility balanced with confidence is so important. I think that's what people really saw in me. I think I was complimented about that a number of times. So I think that worked well. With interviews as well, always be prepared to, you know, talk about yourself for a minute. Every interview is always going to ask you, hey, Akil, tell me about yourself. Hey, Mark, tell me about yourself. Tell me what got you into dermatology. Always be prepared with those answers. And don't prepare like a 5-minute explanation to those answers either, right? So try to do it in a brief one minute, like synopsis. Like, I think by the end of it, I was asked that question about like 30 or 40 times. So I kind of had it down pat in my, you know, combined. And another thing is, like, even when you're applying to dermatology, I had to apply to all these TY programs and prelim programs. So all these interviews like really prepared me to, you know, be comfortable talking, you know, and yeah, about myself. And you'll kind of have that down pat. But I would say, and like going on that note, I think something a lot of people don't realize is like, oh, maybe don't schedule like one of your most important interviews as your very first interview. I think your very first interview like shows you a lot about this whole process and makes you comfortable. Like, luckily I had one of my transitional year programs as one of my first interviews, because those are the programs that come that kind of lay out their interviews first. So I think I got invited to that program like the day after I submitted ERAS, and I did it like in I think it was like the week after applications were due, I had interviewed with them. So I think scheduling them, like I think like interviewing with those prelim programs, TY programs when you're doing dermatology, like really like helps set the tone for your actual derm interviews that are, you know, a little bit more important. So I think like scheduling those, like I wouldn't say like, you know, go don't schedule your interviews like in December, right? But maybe like a week after your one of your TY program interviews, you know? I think doing that was important. I think always talking about yourself, you know, there's a lot of common questions that you can be asked, right? I think a question I was asked was like, hey, tell me about your proudest accomplishment. You know, there's so many ways to approach that question, but the way you approach that question more so than the actual accomplishment is what matters. So I know, you know, there's ways you could talk. You could maybe talk about a research article. You know, for me, I wasn't someone who was going to be talking about like research in that experience. I talked about my like volunteer experience as my proudest accomplishment because it's something that was close to my heart. And I think, you know, talking about those things and talking about like your life away from medicine, talking about how you got into medicine, if that was unique, all those things are really important during interviews. So try to showcase who you are as a person. They're always going to ask about your hobbies. So when you're talking about your hobbies, you know, just show level of enthusiasm and just be genuine. I think that's the biggest thing. Like people can really tell when, you know, you're putting on a facade or you're putting on, you know, an act. So I think just having this, like, have a normal conversation, you know, don't be intimidated by who the other person is on the other side of the screen. Most interviewers are very laid back, whether it's for anesthesia or dermatology, they're just trying to get to know you as a person. It's not like a pimp session. It's not like that, right? So I think like having that understanding, being comfortable by my fourth or fifth interview, you know, I was very comfortable. The program I matched at was actually, they only had one interview date and that was in January. And that was the only interview date they had for the whole program. They interviewed all 30 or 40 applicants that day. And I think like, because it was later in the interview season, I was so comfortable with who I was as a person and who I, you know, how to approach interviews that I did really good on that interview, right? So I think doing things like that is super important. My first interviews, like, I can like undoubtedly admit, like, weren't that great compared to the ones on my like latter half of the season.
Yeah, that's super good advice. I like the emphasis on like doing kind of the softball interviews a little bit earlier. Man, that must have been a lot with applying to the transitional year, prelim programs, anesthesia, dermatology. How many transitional and prelim years did you apply to?
So that's another thing a lot of people don't know anything about. Like, I definitely had to ask like current TY residents. I was like, yo, how many did you apply to? And I had applied to probably more than I needed to. I think I had applied to maybe like 20 TYs, 25 TYs. And then so the way ERADS works is if you apply to either one prelim or 10 prelims, it's the same price for the first 10 programs. So I'd went ahead and applied to all 10 prelims that I was interested in. So yeah. I think by the end of it, I had like 30 TY or prelim interviews combined. I probably looking back, I may not have like applied to the IM prelims just because I knew I wanted to do a transitional year. There's certain people who IM prelims work better for, right? So I don't know. I think those interviews are super high yield. But then there's also other people who got more, you know, derm interviews than they had TY interviews. So I think it really just depends on like the area you're in. I'll say this, like a lot for dermatology and for more so for other specialties, your region or your home address, which you are in, plays a huge role with what interviews you're going to get. For dermatology, it's a lot more spread out because they're more based on auditions and everything. But for anesthesia, one thing I realized was even though I was applying all over the country, I probably got 90% of my interviews around Texas, Louisiana, and in the South. So just being aware and cognizant of that is really important. Putting your like preferences. I know it's like always like a question of should I do preferences? Should I put no regional preference? I put a regional preference because I did have a preference and I think it worked well for the programs I applied to. there's a lot of like mixed debate on whether you should put no regional preference. I got interviewed from programs all the time that were not in my preference region. The program I matched at, I don't think was in my preference region. So, you know, there's always, it's not like if you don't put them as a preference, it's a hard no from them. I think that's really important to consider, especially because I know they're changing like the supplemental application. I know it's different from like how it was in our year. So I think being aware of that and understanding that's important as well.
Yeah, there's a lot changing. So there's a lot to consider. And then, you know, say somebody, just kind of out of curiosity, you know, say somebody didn't match into dermatology, didn't dual apply, but they did match into their transitional year program. Like, what options does that applicant have?
Yeah, there's a lot of programs now that are catered to advanced applicants, so physician only spots. There's some programs that only take physician only spots as well. So it's always a trade-off. I honestly do not know if I, you know, whether it would be better to match at a TY versus doing your research year and then trying to apply as a MS, you know, like similar to MS4s, like for those positions, because then you could you have a wider net, but at the same time the pool is bigger as well. So it's a trade-off, right? If you do a TY year and you're applying to derm, there's definitely a smaller pool of applicants for those physician only spots. And you also have the ability at that point to like see where, if dermatology is right, and to maybe apply to another advanced specialty if that's what you want to do, right? You know, I think it is definitely harder as a TY resident. It's hard to do auditions like during your TY year if you don't match. I know of someone who was unfortunately didn't match and had to go through that process. And I think it is tough to, it's definitely a struggle. Your TY program is definitely going to help you though. They do want you to match. I know they allowed like this person to go certain days to a clinic to audition or to, you know, interact and you know, off days during interviews. Like there are people, there are programs like that. It really depends on your program as well, right? But it is tough to do like full out, like can you do a 3 week or 4 week audition for a derm program while you're a TY resident? Probably not, right? Because that's just against ACGME, or, you know, that's against like residency, that's against like your hours. Like, so yeah, it's tough in that sense. But it does allow you to, you know, not waste a year and, like, you know, just continue on your path to dermatology if you do match, right? So I think that's unique. I think there's certain people who do IM prelims for that case, because say they didn't match into dermatology even during their IM prelim, they can choose to just continue, you know, their IM as the IM, basically like a PGY2, and, you know, just go into their second year of IM if that's what they choose to do. And sometimes that's at the same program they did their prelim at. So that's a pro in that sense. I know of people who are interested in dermatology who didn't match, and then during their TUI, they applied to dermatology, but they also applied to some other like advanced specialties. I know someone who applied to RADS because she ended up liking that, and she ended up matching to RADS at the end of the day. So, you know, it's not like you should keep your options open at the end of the day. It does. It's very unfortunate, you know, because of like the just competitiveness of the field. You know, there is a very realistic possibility anyone can go unmatched, right? Regardless of your stats. So it's a very real possibility. So like preparing yourself for that is super important.
Yeah. And I think these are good conversations to have. And, you know, it's helpful. It's really helpful for students. So appreciate you sharing that. Before we kind of close up here, I have two last questions for you. First of all, do you want to just tell us a little bit about the program that you matched at and kind of introduce the listeners to that program?
I matched into Health Partners Dermatology in Minneapolis and in the Twin Cities. I had really like looked into the program. You know, I remember when I was like looking at which programs to apply to on ERAS, I saw their mission statement. I saw what they were doing. They had a lot of emphasis on serving the underserved and being a program for the community and helping underprivileged individuals in the community. And Health Partners is like a nonprofit organization. So we see, you know, a lot of variety and of dermatological conditions, and like I always wanted to have this like understanding of dealing with like people of different socioeconomic statuses. And you know, there's certain derm conditions you're going to see when you're dealing with underprivileged and poorer individuals than you will in like an affluent community, right? So yeah. I think this program really emphasized that. I really had like a great connection when I interviewed with the PDs and with the residents. I felt like I really hit it off. I know a lot of people say that, but it really was like this instant like connection. Like I really felt like I belonged there. And I think even like during my interview, one thing I emphasized was like I always wanted to be in a program that valued me as much as I valued them. And I told the PD that. And I think when I said that, I saw his face and I saw him kind of light up, because I think that's so important. You want to be somewhere that values you as much as you value them. And, you know, that's tough to find during residency, right?
Yeah. Because
there is, yeah, that's a very tough thing to find during residency. I think I found that in my program. I think it's an amazing program and yeah, like a great fit for me.
Super cool. Oh man, that's so exciting.
And I guess as a DO, like one of the things that stood out to me was like they were more open to like they had a DO match there, even though they're not like a previously historic DO program. They did have like a previous DO who matched. So, you know, I have a fellow DO co-resident, which made it, you know, more comfortable for me to apply and, you know, understand that they were open-minded to taking DOs. They had like this is something I saw like in another program as well. We had a resident who previously did like, for example, an IM residency who decided to do a derm residency on top of that. So like seeing this like complete, like just like a broad variety in their residence and who they took, like I think that really showed me like that was a program I wanted to be at.
That's so awesome. And it's good to see that, you know, there's more open-mindedness coming to fruition for DO students. And I think that's been helpful on this podcast just to hear from not just you, but others as well. And then just before we close up, last question I have for you is any general advice for students? I mean, obviously you've given a lot of great advice, but just kind of as you reflect on your experience and getting to this point, what would you tell students in med school?
Yeah, I would definitely say like try to keep an open mind, you know, going into your clinical years. If you see something that like remotely you think you're interested in, like try to go into the field even for a couple of days, try to expose yourself to that field. You don't want to regret it later on. You know, third year of med school like flies by. It really does. It becomes time to apply very quickly. So I think like having like a good third year base and understanding what you don't and do not like is pivotal. Also, I know there's this huge emphasis on studying for boards. Do what works for you. Like I did something, for example, I know this is completely different than my counterpart, my co-resident Johnny, who matched her, who loves Anki. But for example, Anki didn't work for me. I'm not someone who used Anki. I'm more of an audiovisual learner, but like I studied like solely based on Sketchy. Like I loved Sketchy. I used it for Path. I used it for Micro. I used Pixarize for immuno. Like I used all these like different visual mnemonics because that's what helped me. That's what like that's honestly what got me through even like step three and level three just right now. Like it was like the videos I had watched as like a third or fourth year. So, you know, really like understand like what works for you. So I think like understanding your learning style, not being like kind of not being intimidated by other people's learning styles is important too, right? So for me, like I was a visual learner. I like kind of rode along that, and I realized that it helps me to watch and listen to videos, and that's kind of like all I needed. So I would just watch Boards and Beyond on, or like Pathoma, I'd watch those on repeat. I would just kind of like, and now I can like hear Sitar's voice like in my head. Like that's how many times I probably watched those videos. Like, so yeah, I mean, like understand what works for you. Understand, like, yeah, just don't be intimidated by other people's learning styles. Cause I know like in med school, it's easy to see what other people are doing and kind of, you know, want to do that and kind of mimic that, but everyone learns differently. So just be comfortable with that. And during interviews, try to show who you are as a person. Like I said, really just, yeah, just be confident, be humble, you know, try to show the best version of yourself that you can be.
I love it. This has been so great. I mean, there's been a lot to unpack here, but I think all of it's been valuable, and just appreciate you coming on. There you have it. Dr. Akil Abraham. Thanks, Akil.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.